Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back. This is episode 310, what was going to be the final episode of Whence Came You. I say was, and that's because I went to the Apple store and we looked at the computer and the video card pretty much was shot, being an older model, yada, yada, yada. So went ahead and we just had to get a new one. So we got a new system. We're up and running and the show will go on. I'm very excited about this and I hope you are as well. We're going to keep on putting this education out as long as there's a demand, and there is a demand. A big shout out to my wife, who essentially said that she wasn't going to let me quit the show or turn the show off while there was a demand for it. So we're just going to keep on TCBing. So again, many thanks to those of you out there who showed us a tremendous amount of support. There were a couple brothers who helped us out, and I have to say, you know who you are. Thank you very much. And it means a lot to me. And again, I cannot thank you enough. Over the last few weeks, we had a couple really great episodes of the Masonic Roundtable, including episode 178. We covered the Independent Order of the Odd Fellows, which we had a special guest on, Seth Anthony, who gave us some really great stuff. We also did episode 179 last week, which was Anti-Masonry 101, and we got to cover quite a bit of great material there. Just an excellent, excellent program that we really had a lot of fun, and we had a great time talking about the bummer that is anti-masonry as it rears its head on occasion. So check those out Tuesday nights, 10, 9 central, every Tuesday. It's a good time. They are live. YouTube news. Episode 308 did not process on YouTube, so I do apologize. It's not going to be available on YouTube. So episode 308, if you're listening to this and you say, hey, usually I listen to the show on YouTube, I do apologize. You are going to have to go ahead and hit up episode 308 on the application or on our RSS site or on the website and just click play on the flash player there. Should be sufficient for you, I hope. We decided to go ahead. We have the full tally of the future of the program as it relates to whether or not we were going to split into a new show. Some of you may remember a few episodes back, we got to episode 300 and episode 301 came out, and episode 1 on iTunes disappeared because iTunes only shows us 300 episodes. So what would we do? Should we start a new show? Whence Came You Season 2 and put it on iTunes and started episode 301 and remove the last several episodes of Whence Came You, move them over there, and then you'd have to be subscribed to both. So it was kind of interesting. We would end up losing listeners by going into a Season 2. So what we decided to do was to continue on. As each new episode comes out, an old episode will disappear on iTunes only. That is to say, if you are still looking to listen to episode 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever number we're on, those are still available to you anytime you want. They're just not in iTunes. So what you'll need to do is just go to our website and visit the RSS feed, or you can visit our Libsyn page, or you can visit pretty much anywhere. Even just the most common thing would be to download the Podcast Source app on your phone. While in there, you're going to search for Whence Came You, click Add Show, and that's how you get all of the episodes and the mobile wallpapers that we put out each week, as well as the papers that we read on the program right in that application. So it's always available to you. It's free, and it used to be a paid app, but we got to a point where we had generated our cost back, and we stopped charging for it because there's no need to anymore. It's a free app now. So please enjoy, check it out, Podcast Source, and while you're in there, search Whence Came You, and then add the show. You'll need to find it on Google Play, the Play Store, or you'll find it on the App Store on your iPhone or iPad. There's also an app for the Windows 10 app as well. This week, I'm super excited because I was recently asked by a group of gentlemen talking about Castle Island Virtual Lodge. I was lucky enough to attend Lodge virtually with Castle Island Virtual Lodge. just this last week, and it was an incredible experience. All education opened on the first degree. That's right, we opened up over the web. Really cool concept. If you guys have ever heard of it, great. If you haven't, I suggest you check it out. It is a legitimate lodge recognized by every Grand Lodge, even yours. I don't care where you are. If they recognize Manitoba Grand Lodge, then Civil Castle Island Virtual Lodge, CIVL, is recognized. They don't do degree work. They only do education. So they open up on the first, do education, and they've been around a while, guys. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty cool. But anyway, they sent me a bunch of preparatory questions that they were going to ask for the episode relating to podcasting and Freemasonry. And one of the questions I didn't get to answer on the program, but my answer is relevant to this episode, which is, what was your favorite episode and why? And I have to say, to date, my favorite episode is this one. This episode right here, because I got to interview Stephen Harrison, one of the coolest, kindest, and inspirational brothers I've ever had the pleasure to meet, either online or in person. He's been a mentor to me and countless others. For that reason, this was my favorite episode ever. I'm excited. I hope you're excited. Let's get right into this really cool episode where we talked with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison about a great many things, including his newest book. All right, everybody, we're here with Stephen L. Harrison, who you are all familiar with, and it's kind of crazy we've never had him on the show outside of the Masonic Minute, really, which I know you all enjoy, as do I. So first of all, welcome to the show in this manner, Brother Steve.
Thanks so much, Robert. Glad to do it.
Our people who listen to the show, our listeners, really know of you from your many books as well as the Masonic Minute. And it's been really fantastic. And we've had just so many guys really enjoy the Masonic Minute, especially some of the first few ones we did. In fact, up at Attleboro Masonic Con, the first year they did it, they just had, they have this huge screen, and they actually played the Masonic Minutes on repeat all day long on this huge screen. And people would just sit down and just watch them. And I just found that, you know, how incredible that is. You know, what a storyteller you are. Everybody just loves it. So I have to thank you for that.
Wow. Well, what they did at Attleboro is kind of what they're for and why they're out there.
Yeah.
Just to use however you want.
Yeah, and I think they just speak for themselves, and they're just so, they tell a unique story, just things that are not always known, and in that, anytime I listen to them, of course, we get sucked into them, but I'm also reminded of Tales from the Craft, and how you have this unique ability to do storytelling, and you used to do, I don't know if are you still publishing on the blog page that you had initially?
What I'm usually doing with the blog page now is putting a copy of what I either do for the Midnight Freemasons or the Masonic Minute. When I used to publish the little scenarios on that blog, I was really using the blog to kind of be a placeholder for all of the things I was coming up with to produce the book. And then, I don't know if I should mention this, I know you and I and Todd Creason had a little incident of plagiarism.
Oh, yeah.
And I took them down because I wanted to save it for the book. They're still out there, and I have been considering putting them back online.
Yeah, it's incredible. It was really an amazing kind of blog, and we did run into some plagiarism that happened, and unfortunately, that kind of thing happens, I guess, in our line of business. But so for our listeners out there who might not know of all of your books, I have copies of all of them. The first one I actually received from you was Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi, which is a wonderful book in that it kind of just tells the story of exactly that. How did you get started with that book?
I had been doing a lot of writing for the Missouri Freemason magazine, and one of the Grand Masters came and asked me if I would do an article about the Green Tree Tavern, which has now been discovered to be the first meeting place of Freemasons in Missouri. And I started researching it, and that actually wound up being the first chapter in the book. And after I did it, I recall I had a conversation with the same Grand Master about some other things that we might do. And I can just recall that minute being on the steps with him. He was a man by the name of Bob Berger, and we started kicking things back and forth, and just the idea for the book just began to emerge. And I found out a few more things about Missouri history in particular and how they spread Freemasonry across the West. And the book came out of that.
It's a rarity. It's hard to find. So if you find a copy, pick it up, because if you search it on Amazon, you'll find a copy for $300.
The paperback is pretty rare. There is a copy of it. There's a Kindle version.
Cool. So we can at least get that. We'll try to get a link to that. We'll put it in the show notes. The next book that you guys did, or that you did, was Tales from the Craft, which we actually sold through WCY as well. And that was another incredible read. And I understand that you worked on it kind of in a way where you had to compile things. How did that one come about?
I first got the idea when I read the story, which is in the book, about Abraham Lincoln's son, Robert, having his life saved by brother Edwin Booth. And the story was intriguing. In sort of a Reader's Digest version,
sure,
Edwin Booth saved Robert Lincoln's life by pulling him away from a moving train that he had been pushed into as people were waiting for the train. I guess Edwin Booth never knew it was Robert Lincoln until somebody told him. But the gist of the story is the brother of the man that killed Abraham Lincoln, Edwin Booth was John Wilkes Booth's brother, saved the life of Lincoln's son. And when I read that story, it kind of was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I just started collecting stories like that. And then there was a book that had been written, I honestly forget the title of it right now, that we had in our Missouri archives that had a lot of that kind of stuff in it. And I updated all of that and collected the stories, and it eventually became a book. I have to give my wife, Carolyn, credit, because I was searching for a title for the book, and she's the one that came up with Tales from the Craft. So if it's a good title, it's all credit to her.
It really is. The way I sold it to a lot of folks was not that it needed like, you know, this incredible sell. You know, people buy Masonic books and they just put them on the shelf and they never read them. And I said, you know, this is one that was such a page turner, because every story was like was a page or two. And you flew through the book. And what I really enjoyed was the fact that these were stories that were just out of the ordinary. It was really like a Ripley's Believe It or Not for Masonry. And I just, it was really a cool read.
That's what I kind of tried to make it, or Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story. I tried to put stuff like that in the book.
It was great. The next one was Freemasonry in Oak Island, like I think the fastest book I ever read. Not because it was a terribly small book, but man, you fly through it because you're just, what's next? What's next?
Well, it is a small book.
How did you decide that you had to just clear the air about Freemasonry in Oak Island?
Well, I had been kidding around about Oak Island. I worked at a place where I was the only Freemason working there, and it was about the time that the film National Treasure came out. And people, knowing that I was in the Masons and all that, would try to either jab me with it or get under my skin or whatever, and they would, hey, where do you Freemasons really have your treasure buried? And I would just say Oak Island, not knowing a thing about Oak Island.
Right.
And so I thought, well, maybe I better do some research on that. And then I began to see all of the Masonic parallels that are there, and it was pretty easy to get into it. I wrote a couple articles about it, and the next thing I knew, along with the articles, I did a presentation on Oak Island, and the presentation was so long. It's even now that I have cut it down, it's probably too long.
No, it's perfect.
But anyway, so I took a whole lot out of the presentation and wrote the book kind of to say, if you want to know the rest of what's going on there, it's all in the book.
Yeah, I found that I read the book, and then I went down and I saw you in Fremont, Illinois. You came in. And then from there, I ended up seeing you again. You know, we had you come out, and we had a little change of a schedule, but you did it for us in D.C. And I'll tell you, we had so many guys that came up to us and said, man, this guy who we know from the show and his books, just as a storyteller, like, what an incredible presentation that was. So again, you know, just fantastic job with that. I think on more than one occasion I have joked and offered, seriously, I said, if we're ever going to go to Oak Island, we're bringing Steve Harrison. We're going to kidnap him. We're taking him with us. Any plans to head up there anytime soon?
I'd like to go. No firm plans. But, you know, my wife has now just retired, and we're sort of free to do what we want to do, and we may make it up there at some point. I will say this, if anybody who's listening and you want to go up there, you have to make plans to do it. Oak Island is private property, and you don't just walk onto the island, but they do give tours. So the answer to your question, Robert, is I'd like to go someday, but I don't have firm plans.
Right on. Maybe we get you, when you go, though, you got to take all these videos, and you got to have to make this presentation bigger. Maybe you make a documentary film, The Freemason Returns to Oak Island.
Either that or the presentation that's too long becomes even longer.
Maybe. So let's talk about this new book. This one is a little bit unusual in that, so the new book is called Masonic Memoranda of Frederick L. Billen. And again, Steve is the editor of this one. When we get into it, of course, this is a piece of, I guess you would call it, you know, it's something for the library from the Missouri Lodge of Research. And of course, Steve is the editor. There was an editorial committee. And in the introduction of the book, or about the book, it is interesting in that the book has all kinds of wild ways it's written. There's no periods, there's dashes, things are abbreviated weird. Can you give us kind of what this book is and what it's about?
The first time I ever heard of the book, I was in the officer's line of the Missouri Lodge of Research. In fact, I was senior warden that year, and we were having one of our quarterly meetings, just the officers. And on the agenda was one of the guys who is in our grand line. He's a man named Ty Treutler. And he was on the agenda to make a presentation to the Lodge of Research. And Ty walked in and started talking about this book and the journey that he had been on to find it, and he found it. He literally looked for the thing for 7 years.
Holy cow.
And, oh yes, he had read in a 1944 proceedings, somebody had made the statement that this memoranda of Billen's was probably the most important single Masonic document in the Grand Lodge of Missouri. And then nobody ever saw it after those proceedings came out. Ty set out on a quest to find it. He started out at the Masonic Temple in St. Louis, which had also been the home of the Grand Lodge. Couldn't find it. I think at one point he went to California to look in a library. I think Denslow has a library in Georgia that he went to look, and he was just about to give up, and he went back to St. Louis on another project, and that's when he found it. And that whole story is in the book.
Wow.
So he came to our meeting at the Missouri Lodge of Research and presented the book in a scanned form to the Missouri Lodge of Research and basically said, now, guys, it's in your hands. Do with it what you will. And once we went through it, it became obvious to us as part of Missouri's history that we really should publish this book. And that's where we started. And then I was selected to edit the book, and that's when, as I've said before, I knew I needed lots of help on that, and that's when we formed the editorial committee, and we made a project of it during 2016.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book. So there's lots of, I guess, what you would call lists in here, you know, with Masonic membership, and what exactly is contained? What's so important? If this is the most important Masonic document in the Grand Lodge of Missouri, why was it the greatest? Like, what was in it that made it so amazing?
Well, first of all, let me be clear. It's probably more important to Missouri than it is to other Grand Lodges.
Sure.
There's a lot of Missouri history in there. And yes, the tables, they're kind of boring. but they are also a valuable resource to go check up on some of the members that we might have lost track of, because some of those tables, you know, a lot of them are like, here's John Doe when he was initiated, passed, raised, suspended, passed away. All that information is there in different columns on the tables.
Sure.
So that is valuable, but it's not exactly what you would call gripping reading.
Sure.
But there's other stuff in the book, and again, a lot of it is just for Missouri, that tells about our history and what happened at certain points in time that we didn't even know about. There were people, in fact, the entire York Rite, I made a presentation to them about the book. They were not aware that the York Rite in Missouri had actually completely closed down during the Morgan Affair. Ooh. And yet, Billen gives us that story as to how the York Rite, as well as the Grand Lodge of Missouri, closed down for 8 years after the Morgan Affair. So that kind of stuff is in there.
That is incredible. I mean, just from the Morgan Affair, this was the cause of Illinois closing down. In fact, I think we got our second charter to operate. I know Illinois is tied to Missouri somehow, like how we got chartered, our Grand Lodge.
I think we issued the second charter.
I think you did too.
Yeah. Well, there's that kind of stuff. And on the other hand, there's also stuff that might be of interest outside the state, like interesting little section about the death of DeWitt Clinton. And it helps to remind you that, you know, we live in a day of instant communication. And back then, how he gives the account that they only started getting rumors that DeWitt Clinton, who was the head of the York Rite at the time, had died. And then it actually took 3 weeks before they got confirmation about it. He went to the Baltimore Convention. He went to other national groups, as I think that, you know, they were trying to get a Grand Lodge of the United States started.
Right.
So he has his thoughts about that. And there are pieces in there where he met people like the Marquis de Lafayette, where he tells how William Clark of the Lewis and Clark expedition actually gave part of his home for a Masonic lodge.
Wow.
And I don't want to build the book as something that just, you know, has to be everything for everybody. It's a Missouri book, but there are things in there beyond what might be of interest in Missouri.
Sure. And I suspect that a lot of these kind of historical tidbits that are in the book, things about Lewis and Clark, things about Marquis de Lafayette, those are stories, of course, they're in this book and it's special to Missouri, but I think that speaks to American Freemasonry in general. I think that's really incredible. And to kind of hear some of the interesting stories that have happened when Masonry shut down after the Morgan Affair, you know, there's not really a clear, I guess, personal account of a lot of that stuff. And so it's really interesting that's in this book. Did you have any moments while you were writing this book where you had like a holy cow moment? I mean, I know you mentioned the York Rite and some of the, you know, Marquis de Lafayette and Lewis and Clark. Were there any areas of this book where you thought, holy cow, this is a book you could write in itself, or something that just kind of floored you?
Well, if you had the full story, yeah, I think the most intense moment for me was when they did shut down the Grand Lodge of Missouri. He, in a way, puts you in those meetings, and you just want to stand up and scream, no, don't do it. You really, really get the sense of what was going on then.
Hmm.
There were one other really interesting thing to me that I had to dig out. At places in the book, he talks about a meeting that took place on January 1st, 1800. Now, this was before he was even born, but it took place at Lodge Lamennite, which was a French lodge in Philadelphia. And they gathered, this was about 2 weeks after George Washington had passed away, and they gathered at that lodge for a memorial service on the first day of the new century to memorialize George Washington. And the entire thing was done in French, but this was his father's lodge. And so that's why he included it. But what he included just kept saying, oh, it was, the whole presentation was wonderful. And he kept talking about it. But at no point did I have a copy of the presentation to know what it said. The appendix of the book is the text of that presentation.
Wow.
So if you're interested in that kind of thing, we did include that. I thought the book would not be as complete if we didn't dig out what that presentation was and include it with the book.
When you read the about section in the book, it does talk about many of the original transcripts and how you wanted to initially add all of the original pages as they were written, but then of course the type of script he used, the oldness of the paper,
mm-hmm.
And everything would make it very difficult to read, and also the book would be over 500 pages.
Right. What we were doing there is we were going to do a page of transcript sitting next to a picture of that page of the book. And It was just impossible from every standpoint, even a graphic arts standpoint. Every page would have needed its own personal touch to make it light enough or dark enough so you could read it. So we scrapped that idea, but the book does have a few pictures of those pages in there to give you an idea.
Yeah, and it's really kind of nice, too. The pictures that are in here, it reminds me of looking at something like, if anybody out there has copies of the Jefferson Bible, where it has the page of transcript and then the page of notes next to it kind of thing. But you can see the pictures in this, and you can see just how difficult that would have been. I work in Photoshop on a weekly basis just for outside projects, and to have to go through each individual picture and adjust for what would make those pictures clear could take forever, especially with a book that's already 250 pages, and then you're going to add another 250 pages to it would be just quite the undertaking. But I feel like you guys just did a tremendous job the way you laid it out anyway, and it is important that if you guys are picking this book up, make sure you do read about this book, because it does talk about how there are different typefaces and font sizes and everything, because you guys did go page for page.
We did. Page for page, word for word. What you find on that page is exactly what was on Billen's same page, same page number of his book. And you mentioned his punctuation and all of that. Some of the writing is a little bit weird, but we went through that and decided to make this book as close to absolutely what he wrote as we possibly could. Billen really never used a period at the end of a sentence. He used a dash. And so you see a lot of dashes at the end of a lot of sentences in the book. But you're literally reading what he wrote.
Yeah, it's really a great kind of experience going through it. If you enjoy history, I think it's wonderful. And like you said, yes, it's for Missouri Masons mostly, but I think any scholar of history would really enjoy it. So I've got a few copies that I'll be sending out to the lucky guys who sent in the best questions for you. And if you're okay with it, I'd like to go through some of those questions with you.
I would like to say one more thing about the book. If you want to a cheap copy, it is on Kindle as well.
Very cool. We'll make sure we have links to it as well, and we'll add it to kind of the WCY bookstore area on the website, which it's just links to the books. There's no kickbacks to the show or anything. So those guys out there, please check that out, and we'll kind of go into these questions. So one of the first questions we got, I announced that I would be asking you some questions, and literally an hour and a half, 2 hours after the episode had come out, I got a question, and this one is from Michael Laidlaw in West Covina, 446 Grand Lodge, California. And his question for you is, who is the biggest influence on your Masonic career? And how often have you tried to emulate them?
Wow, you mean besides my dad?
So, yeah, if you don't know, guys, Steve Harrison's dad was also a Mason.
There have been so many. I can hardly narrow it down to one. If you just forced me, within the Grand Lodge of Missouri, there was a man named J.C. Montgomery. He just passed away within the past year, who was the editor of the Missouri Freemason magazine prior to my becoming editor. He wasn't just prior to me, but he was two editors back. He was a lot of help, especially during my early days as editor, when I wasn't too sure where to go or what to do with the magazine. And he wrote the foreword to my first book, and he was a mentor. And I really appreciated everything that JC did for me, just to kind of, if I had questions or anything, I was able to go to him. And not only that, I believe when he passed away, I think he was 98, he was writing articles right up to the end. So wow. Talk about an inspiration. He was certainly an inspiration to me here in the state. I just have to mention, and I just did a Masonic Minute on the guy, that when I was a DeMolay, we had a chapter dad who was the world champion table tennis player.
Right,
and
yeah.
He was quite a celebrity in Indianapolis. He had no kids. And so his kids were the DeMolay. His name was Jimmy McClure. And I would say early on, he was the big influence in my Masonic life, if you count DeMolay. And again, all of that is beside my dad.
That's amazing. There you go, Brother Mike. I hope you got your answer there. We'll move on. I have another question. This is from Brother Michael Overturf. And he says, how much has Freemasonry evolved or devolved since the founding of the fraternity? So in your opinion, he said, it appears that the issues we're having now have existed in Dwight L. Smith's and all the way back to Albert Mackey.
Since the founding, huh?
Yeah, he's asking, how has Freemasonry evolved or de-evolved? And I think what he's driving at here are the issues that we have within the fraternity today. And he thinks that maybe these have been issues from the beginning.
I don't know about from the beginning. As I imagine the founding of Freemasonry, or especially as it went through the Renaissance and times like that, in my fertile imagination, I imagine these guys getting together in lodges and talking about high-minded issues, science, math, and doing more of that kind of thing than we do today. But even as old as I'm getting, I wasn't around for the founding of Freemasonry, so I don't know for sure. Here's an example that I think has some bearing on that. A few years ago, I found among my dad's stuff an old copy of one of his Indiana Freemason magazines, and I read it cover to cover. And as I read the thing, it's like I could have been reading a magazine from today. They were into the same things. They were dedicating this. They were helping with that charity. They would talk about events in the lodges as we talk about them today, give little snippets from the lodges. It was like reading a current day magazine. And if we want to get into the membership issue, the other thing about that magazine, you have to think, Freemasonry had twice the membership back then that they do now. And you'll never guess what they needed, more members. So, you know, that issue is never going to go away. I'm sure that there have been changes, but change is slow. And I think a lot of the issues are the same. I don't know if that answers the question. I'm trying to think of what might be a major change, even since my dad's day to the current time. We all can communicate over the internet now, and maybe that draws us closer when we're out of the lodge. So that may be a change, but I think things have been pretty steady.
All right, so your next question is from Brother Mike Hambrick. And he says, if you could go anywhere in the world in search of new personal tales from the craft, where would you go and why?
Well, part of the answer is I would go upstairs to my office and sit down and do some more research. There's a lot of tales out there, and so that's part of it. But if he means geographically, and by the way, we need to say that Mike is Mike the intern on the round table.
Yeah.
And 20 years from today, he'll probably be Mike the intern, but that's who we're talking about.
Probably.
I was so pleased to meet him in Alexandria. You know, I would like to go to the Holy Land. I don't know that I would find tales from the craft there. Here is what I discovered writing that book. Everybody has a tale from the craft. Everybody has some quirky little thing that has happened to them. And all you would really have to do would be go to your brothers and see if you can dig that out of them.
For sure. Yeah, I think that is an interesting way to look at it, because just from my own standpoint, I find that there are elements in my own lodge's history, and by no means is Waukegan Lodge some like monument to Freemasonry, but you find things in these histories that just mind-blowing, give you chills sometimes. When I read that our lodge ordered the charter to be draped for 1 year instead of the typical 30 days, for the death of the Supreme Magistrate. And I'm like, who's the Supreme Magistrate? I kept reading. It was dot, dot, dot. You know, it had the ellipses, and then it said Abraham Lincoln. And I was like, holy.
Oh my.
Yeah, holy cow. Yeah. This is intense, you know? And you keep reading, and you find out that our lodges merged because there wasn't enough guys to open during the Civil War. And you keep on reading, and you find out, like, you know, just wild and crazy things. And for a while now, I've been trying to pin down some of the past masters of my lodge to do audio interviews with them for kind of a lodge historical website. And I've been wanting to sit down with this one gentleman, Hardy Evans. We had built a temple in 1921 and subsequently lost it in the 80s. But he was the last master at that temple and the first master at the building we're in now. And I've always wanted to pin him down and talk to him about how you did it. This has got to be one of the most sore things that lodges have to do to close down these monumental structures and build something else or go somewhere else. So this is the Tales from the Craft, I think, for me.
Maybe the best way to do it would be just sit here, sit back, and tell your brothers, send in your tale from the craft. Because I'm not kidding. We've all got one. So that might be the easiest way to do it.
Maybe. So I've got just a couple more questions for you, Steve. One is, what's a piece of advice you would give a Masonic writer?
Wow. Right from what you know, gosh, it just takes persistence. If you're going to do something like put out a book, maybe the advice would be start with an article if you want to be a Masonic writer. The way I wrote that first book, it takes a lot of discipline. And the way I wrote the first one was every single chapter that's in the book, I wrote as a chapter and then first published in the Missouri Freemason magazine. And that way you sort of get that instant gratification of finishing a chapter and then seeing it published immediately. So I did that for all of the chapters in that book except for a couple. And it helps keep you on track. That's a good way to go about it, but it's not the only way to go about it. I would certainly say if you're really going to be serious about writing, you've got to know English structure. In other words, you have to be able to write. You can't just throw words on a paper, and you've got to know how to be concise. And so you kind of need to be a little English or journalism major at the same time.
Right on. You kind of answered the subsequent questions in there, which was, how did you push yourself to get the book done? And the last question I have is, and this is another one, because you're just such an amazing storyteller, really. What's your favorite story that you've never told? And you don't have to tell it here. That might be a book. But is there a favorite story you've never told that you might be able to allude to a bit?
Well, there's my favorite story, and the simple fact is I have told it. It's in the book, but it kind of qualifies because I've never told anyone it's in the book. I've let people see if people come back to me and discover it, and they really haven't. As I said, everybody has a story, and one of the stories that I included in my book, I included three personal stories. One was about that champion table tennis player, Jimmy McClure. One was about a guy that my dad reported to, or who bought my dad's company, by the name of Sammy Regenstrief, who, he didn't invent the home dishwasher, but he perfected it to the point that you and I can have a dishwasher in our homes today. And then the third story that I've never really told anybody or alluded to is there's a story about my dad in that book. When he was in business, we all think our dad's a hotshot, but I think he really was. And he was listed in Standard & Poor's Guide to Corporate Executives, National Guide.
Oh, wow.
And see, I'm proud of my dad. And he was listed in there. And there was a clerical error in his listing that also listed him as the president of United States Natural Resources, which sounds like a pretty good environmental company, but actually United States Natural Resources cut down trees for a living is what they did. But they listed him as president of it. It was wrong. He wasn't. So the story is that one day, Dad and Mom were coming home from dinner, and he pulled in the driveway, and there were some men in suits at the front door tacking a note to the door. And he walked up to them, and it was the FBI. By the way, I still have his listing from Standard & Poor's, and I have the note that the FBI left. It seems that you may remember her name from history, Squeaky Frome, had taken a pot shot or tried to take a pot shot at Gerald Ford. And I think her gun misfired, but they still sentenced her to life in prison. And they were investigating that action. And the question is, what did it have to do with my dad? Well, the Squeakster was an environmentalist. And she somehow got a copy of that book, which back then listed your name and address in the book. And she found the National Resources listing, and she used my dad's name and address as the return address for one of her mailings. And they found that when they raided her apartment. And so that's his tale from the craft, and one that, even though it's in the book, I've never told anybody that.
That's fantastic, and thanks so much for sharing that. That's wonderful. What a wild and crazy story, though. Well, so what's next for Steve in the Masonic world? What are you working on next? Do you have any plans? I know you said wife just retired, so you guys kind of have a wide open future there.
Well, as I told a guy yesterday, we've had a motorhome for years, but we just traded it in on a new one. And come cold weather, I'm just going to point it south and see where it winds up. I do have a couple things I'm working on. I have discovered some new, old information about the Morgan affair that I want to chase down. And I'll probably be contacting the Midnight Freemasons with an article about that as soon as I can track all of the original documents down, if I can. I don't have a book per se on the horizon right now, but I did just meet last week with the guy who will be the master of the Missouri Lodge of Research. And we talked about our schedule for new books, and we have a whole lot of Ray V. Denslow material that remains unpublished. And I think we're going to look to publishing some of that.
Yeah, it sounds great. You know, we had made mention a while back on the Masonic Roundtable about lodges of research, and we scoped out the California Lodge of Research, and I got an email from Steve the next day, and he said, you know, everybody's always talking about these other Grand Lodge research. He goes, Missouri Lodge Research really is where it's at. And you know what? I looked into it, and it really is. The Missouri Lodge of Research is ridiculously amazing. I mean, the resources and the book listings, it seems like it's one of the, if not the most premier lodge of research in the United States. How do you guys have so much success with that? Whereas the Illinois Lodge of Research, and you know, we're finally getting back on track, really, with where we should be. But how does the Missouri Lodge of Research keep that steam going?
I think, you know, first of all, it was founded by Harry Truman and a bunch of guys along with him back then. So just having that as our starting point really got it going. And it just picked up a lot of membership. And we maintain today that relationship with Harry Truman by having a strong relationship with Clifton Truman Daniel, who is his grandson, who dedicated our library. And, I think we do a lot of things. We've got an incredible group of people working in the officers line and even members of the Missouri Lodge of Research who continue to contribute to what we do. And every year at Grand Lodge, and this has been very successful, we have the Missouri Lodge of Research breakfast, which is always sold out. And I don't mean sold out in a tiny little room. I mean, we pull back the curtains and do two or three conference rooms together. And it's one of the most popular things at Grand Lodge. And now in recent years, we've been having the Truman lecturers come in and give the lecture at that breakfast. And we've had Michael Halloran, Chris Hodapp, Trevor Stewart, Clifton Truman Daniel has spoken to us twice, Arturo de Hoyos. I mean, these are names that you really should know if you're part of Freemasonry. And it's just the most popular thing I think we do at Grand Lodge. And we keep putting out these books. And it just seems to be something that helps us continue the good work that they're doing. We build a library. We did not have a library as of 5 or 6 years ago. And those books that you see cataloged, we have a past Grand Master. His name is John Hess, who, once he became past Grand Master, I think the library just became his passion. And that's why you see those books out there cataloged. We've got 11,000 books now cataloged for the Lodge of Research Library.
Wow, that's
incredible. Just Well, no, I'll tell you something that I really liked when Chris Hodapp talked to us. He spoke at our breakfast at the Grand Lodge, and he made the statement. He looked out on the throng of people that was out there, and he said, "There are more people in this room than are members of the Indiana Lodge of Research." So that made me feel good for Missouri, not necessarily for Indiana, but for Missouri. We just seem to be able to keep the momentum going.
Yeah, it's an inspiration. I think you guys are doing it right. And anybody out there interested, check out the website. It's just molor.org, and check that out. We're going to have links to everything on the show notes. Steve, I just can't thank you enough for coming on the program and sharing a little bit with us today.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate being on. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks so much. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview. Again, I know I did. And you know what? We all have a Steve Harrison in our lives, and I think we are so lucky to have those kind of people around us. I did want to take just a moment to go over our presentation schedule. If you have taken the time to go to wcypodcast.com and then you click or you hover over the About section and click on Presentation Schedule, you will see a list of prepared topics and some of the upcoming dates that I've got set. The topics that we are covering is still, we want to make sure that we are having relevant topics. We will still do older ones. Older presentations are still valid, but we also have newer concepts as well. We want to make sure that we're bringing cool education to your lodge whenever I'm invited out to do that. So, of course, I still do the Masonic Pub Crawl, which is Freemasonry in America, and it's Colonial Tavern Beginnings. That's about a 40-minute presentation. I do Esoterics 101, which is part one of what I'll call the Quantum Lectures. It's all about the beginning concepts of the deeper aspects of Freemasonry. So, do you want to expose your lodge gently to a whole new world? And this is your presentation. So, this is the first part in a series of lectures that breaches the merger of science and mysticism. This presentation is about 20 to 40 minutes, depending on question and answer sessions. The second one is called The Tetragrammaton, The Lost Word, and that's part two of the Quantum Lectures. This presentation is all about the lost word, string theory, and mythology. It's a second installment. Again, it's about 50 minutes. Quantum Entanglement and Apotheosis. This is part three of the Quantum Lectures. And this lecture focuses on the spooky world of physics, the explanation of apotheosis and the divine secret as it relates to world religions, and is also explained through quantum entanglement. And all of this does tie into Freemasonry itself, so it's really interesting. We do one called Connecting Masons Through Technology, which has a lecture that teaches lodges what they need and what's seen as important in the 21st century in Freemasonry. How to connect, how to be seen, how to be discovered, and staying relevant in the digital world. And we have optional workshops on social media, website creation, etc. that can be scheduled. This is a relatively short presentation at 20 to 30 minutes, and of course, again, if we add a workshop or something to that, then we move through that as well, and you'll look at it probably an additional hour, hour and a half onto that. I do a presentation on the history of Memphis Mizraim, which is goes through the who, what, where of the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis Mizraim. It's a really cool historical information. That's about 30 to 40 minutes. Finding the truth, how to do Masonic research. So in that one, I'll focus on what you need to do to establish yourself as an authority in Masonic writing. I'm not an expert, but I've seen and read a lot, so I have a unique perspective there, and I can hopefully assist anybody who's looking to do any of that. We just recently did one of those on the Illinois Lodge of Research, so if you would like to, you can actually find that presentation. It's on our YouTube channel. And I've also got the Long Been in Darkness, an Exploration of Traditional Candidate Preparation. That's 20 to 30 minutes with Q&A as well. So there's a lot of stuff I can come out to talk to you about. Some upcoming dates. October 2nd, I'll be at Troy Lodge number 34 with a Skype presentation. So I'm Skyping in, and we'll be doing Long Been in Darkness. In the January-February timeframe, I'll be at Szechuan number 4, which actually is across the pond quite a bit. We're going to do The Lost Word. That's Quantum Series Part 2. And March 16th, 2018, I'll be at Chekamenko number 458 with The Lost Word and the Quantum Series Part 2 also. It's going to be a fantastic time. That Chekamenko presentation is up in New York. If you'd like to have me out, dates are kind of filling up. They're starting to trickle in for next year. Again, I am just a regular guy, so I've got a 40-hour work week just like the rest of you, or most of you anyway. So I do need to make sure that I have the PTO available to come out and do talks at your lodge. You know, mostly we meet on weekdays, so that means I got to take a day off of work to come out and do this. So just make sure that if you have a topic in mind and you'd like to have me out, just try to give me good notice of that and let me know. The only thing I ask is that the lodge cover the transportation and lodging while I'm there. No other fees, no honorariums, nothing like that. So just head on over to WCYpodcast.com to check out any of that information. Before we go this week, I just want to once again say thank you to everybody who supports this show, whether you're going and you're making a donation through PayPal or a recurrent donation, whether you are a contributor, a fellow, or a producer. It all counts. It all helps. It's so appreciated. And if you're somebody who wants to get a little something back for your money, that is totally cool. We do have a limited edition shop where we sell our lapel pins, our cufflinks, tie bars. We have a few money clips left, and we have the Mason's Lady car decal. It's a great way to help support this show. Every dollar goes right back to the show, whether that's for hosting costs or equipment. We do also have our Onnit Labs. What's going to be really cool here soon is if you go through our links on our website, you'll be able to go to onnit.com, and they're coming out with some limited edition Star Wars themed things, like Star Wars themed kettlebells and things with like Darth Vader's head or whatever. Kind of cool. So check that out. Of course, Banker's Best, where we've got a really cool beard oil and beard balm that we worked out with Brother Levi Banker, who is totally generous. So if you head on over to buybankersbest.com, use the promo code BBWCY357, and you'll help out the show as well as yourself with a pretty sweet discount. We also have a Thrive account, so WCY and Thrive, and that's it. We tried to find various and creative ways of making the funding of this show important to you, whether that's through a product or something that you can get and the proceeds come to the show, or whether that's just you who want to straight up donate to the program. We very much appreciate it. I'm so very excited that we are continuing the program. And again, this is episode 310, and I hope we can go another 310 episodes. What's the show going to be like in the future? I don't know, but we will be here bringing you Masonic education, listener-supported education, one show at a time. And I'd like nothing more than to bring this show to you Monday through Friday. Wouldn't that be something? That was another question I was asked on Civil 190. What is the pipe dream that we could have as this podcast moves forward? And I've been asked several times if I could do a daily show. That would just be incredible. But unfortunately, again, I work 40 hours a week and I still have lodge nights to go to. So unfortunately, that's probably not going to be a thing until maybe one day when I retire and this program comes to you in some other fashion besides a podcast. Maybe it's some live holographic old RJ sitting in your living room preaching about masonry to you, like a Jedi hologram. I don't know. But in any case, thank you just the same. I'm very excited to continue to bring the show to you all. You are the reason we do it. And until next week, guys, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.